So this talk is basically the continuation of the talk of Eva Silverstein yesterday afternoon. I will show you how to extend this model of large field inflation that produces measurable gravitational waves into a type 2B string theory from the type 2A construction that she talked about. So this is work and still in progress. That's why I said it's not fully closed story. Closed means it's closed string if you want inflation, but it's not fully closed. This is work in progress with Leah McAllister and Eva Silverstein. So in order to bring you back up to speed, I just review a little bit all the attempts that have been done in recent years to build string inflation. So there has been the idea that you move the position of brain, you use the position of brains. In that sense, the model yesterday was similar. This was also the position of a moving before brain there. People started with using D3 brains in type 2B flux compactifications, where the moduli were stabilized, and then if you place an anti-D3 brain in these compactifications, they feel a potential energy and are attracted towards the other stack of three brains, which is down the warp throat in these compactifications. And this motion of the anti-D3 brain then comprises in a possible inflaton. There have been a lot of studies going on about that. Similarly, there's a model of D3, D7 brain inflation, which basically is inflation not driven by an F term, but by a D term, if you want. This corresponds to something like D term inflation. Then there have been models like DBI inflation, where the full DBI action of a V brain was used to generate inflation. The point is that because the DBI action is, if you want, a relativistic generalization of the normal kinetic term, canonically normalized kinetic term of a scalar field in that situation, you get low speeds of sound and measurable non-Gaussianity in these models. So then there have been also models of inflation driven by Kähler moduli, so by the closed string, part of the closed string moduli sector. Typically, you can get potentials for which stabilize the Kähler moduli in minima, and there can be saddle points around. This is one example from 2004 by this group of people. And you basically then have to start your inflaton with a fine-tuned initial condition on this saddle point, and then it can roll slowly off and drive inflation. So the point is that most of these models, I think from the ones that I mentioned, basically all of them, they are all small field models. And referring to the life bound that was already presented yesterday, the fact that in canonically normalized field space, the inflatons of all these models moves only a fraction of the Planck distance means that there are no measurable gravitational waves produced. The tensor fraction, the ratio between the gravitational wave power and the scalar density, scalar curvature perturbation power, is so small that you would not be, and that these models would not be able to measure it. So you see smaller than basically 3 × 10⁻³ if the motion of the field is smaller than a Planck unit. There have been proposals using multiply wrapped brains, where you basically have not just a single brain moving, but a brain multiply wrapped around some cycle, trying to get this way to increase the field range. This idea in principle works, and as you have seen yesterday in the type 2A construction, that basically one could use this multiple circling D4 brain, in a certain sense it has a limit where you can view it as a multiply wrapped object. But in the constructions that have been tried before, typically back reaction stalled. Made these proposals unwieldy before they reached transplanckian field motion. So the recent progress, of course, was, as you've heard in talks here, is this construction on the in type 2A string theory, a new manifold which uses a monodromy to extend the field range of the inflaton field into the transplanckian regime. And the other idea that was presented is that if you study the models of Kähler moduli inflation, you can modify you can choose Calabi-Yau's where you have enough moduli that some of the Kähler moduli upon inclusion of loop corrections also can show up a large field range. So both was presented yesterday. So I would like to show you now how you can use these monodromies to do the same idea that was presented yesterday in type 2B. The point is, why would we like to go to type 2B? For one reason, in type 2B, you have an important class of examples where the moduli are stabilized by fluxes and non-perturbative effects. And in type 2B, because these models live on a Calabi-Yau, on a conformal Calabi-Yau manifold, you might have a chance to combine inflation with low energy supersymmetry. This is not possible in the type 2A construction on the new manifold, because there, the whole construction, the supersymmetry there is broken at a height scale from the very beginning, of the order of the Kaluza-Klein scale there. But here we have a chance. So what can we do in type 2B in order to get these monotremes. The point is that monotremes in Calabi-Yaman atolls have been known for a long time. So they would, the early papers by Candelas et al., for instance, that found that you have monotremes around the large complex structure point of a single parameter, the mirror dual to a single parameter Calabi-Yau, like the quintic. And there can be monotremes when you go around this large complex structure point, which then, mirror dualizing back, correspond to monotremes in the corresponding Kähler multiples that you can use. And the point is that this basic idea we will see that we can have monotremes concerning the Nerve-Schwarz B field or the Ramon-Tramon two-form C field that allows us to get this extended field range. So one way to see this explicitly is to consider a DBI, the DBI action of a D5 brain wrapped on a two-cycle of a Calabi-Yau manifold. So a two-cycle is a two-dimensional subspace of the six-dimensional Calabi-Yau manifold, like a small sphere, if you want. You wrap this D5 brain on on the two dimensions of this cycle, and then you calculate its effective action, which is the DBI action. This has this form. When you reduce it on the metric of a small two-sphere, plus the four large dimensions, of course, which the brain also has to fill, our space-time dimensions, and you find that this determinant evaluates to basically the fourth power of the radius, if you want the length, the diameter scale of this small two cycle, and the B field that you could switch on parallel to the brain, tangential to the brain on this two cycle. So you see here, we have now an object that looks like a length, if you want, that grows when this B grows. And basically, what this thing measures is the tangent of the brain. So the tangent of the brain is the energy, the mass, if you want, of the brain. And this mass, this energy density grows now without end once the B field switches on and becomes larger. The B field originally was a periodic field. And just in three-level string theory, it's just 2 pi periodic. But you see here there is an object that breaks the periodicity. There is explicitly here generated a monodromy in presence of the D5 brain. In principle, this corresponds, this is the analog to the position field of the D4 brain in type 2A on a Neel manifold. You can T-dualize this back, and then you find, in certain limits, you find the other situation back on the type 2A side. So the interesting point is also that when you S-dualize this, you go to do an S-duality transformation on this D5 brain, you can go to an NS5 brain. This is another object in type 2B string theory. And that you could also wrap on the two cycle, but this doesn't see the B field. Instead of it, it sees the C2 form. So with an NS5 form, you can do the same, but using C2 instead of the Nerve-Schwarz B2 field. So let me just try to outline how this may be realized more concretely. We don't have a global model, some kind of whatever F-theory compactification on a fourfold that does this structure yet, but we can describe a kind of local model. So basically, you could take the deformed conifold, more or less, and then orbifold part of its dimensions locally, which are locally C2, just two of them. You orbifold it by a Z2. And that means that where the orbifold has two fixed points, and these two fixed points, you have shrunken two cycles, which you can blow up. Then you have tiny two cycles, on which you can then map these five brains. So there's locally at least a way how to generate a geometry that allows you to wrap these five brains on a shrunken blow up two cycles on this orbifold. Then you could turn on the B2 field, for instance. The point is that when you have down such a Clairvaux-Strasbourg flow, when you have these kind of orbifold fixed point, you put the five brains there, and you also have a stack of D3 brains that gives you the warping in the throat. This is basically a gauge you can describe as a gauge loop quiver theory, with having two nodes corresponding to the two fixed points of this Z2 orbifold. And that, again, you can visualize more easily. You make a T-duality, and you're back to type 2A. And then the point is that this B field in type 2A corresponds, if you want, to the length of a D4 brain that is stretched between two NS5 brains. And what you can see is here basically that when you move these NS5 brains around the circle on which the D4 is wrapped, then it stretches the D4 longer and longer, similarly to, if you want, how the D4 yesterday was wrapped on a cycle that went longer and longer. And this kind of stretching corresponds to the increasing B field on the type 2B side. And that is basically where you see directly, I mean, visually, where the monotremy comes from. So in a sense, this has some similarity to a kind of toy, if you want, these kind of wind-up toys that you can buy in shops for children. you wind up this D4 brain, literally, it stores energy, and once you have wound it up, it will roll back, basically, accelerate, and in the end, it ends somewhere when these NS5s, when it shrinks together to zero size. This is when inflation ends, if you want. So this process is... yeah, I mean, but the universe has to get hot, right? I mean, you shouldn't take it literally, because the potential that that this string or this rubber band inside has is quadratic with stretching. While this here, when you go back here, expanded for large B, this is, go to large B, this is linear in the B field. So this is not exactly an analogy, but the idea of the stretching, whatever object that gets gains energy with more and more stretching in a certain direction, that basically carries over from this toy example. So the point is, I told you that you could use an NS5 brain instead of the D5 brain, using the C2 field. Why can we do that at all? The point is that in this, for instance, in this orbifold examples, I have locally in the geometry an N=4 supersymmetry, and then these five brains are BPS states. And the point is that under the property of being a BPS state, the tangent formulae, the tangent of these brains, and how they depend on the different fields, are invariant under SL2Z2 duality, so basically the S duality. And that allows me to conclude from the dependence of the D5 brain on the B field, the dependence of the NS5 brain on the C field. So you get the same linear potential for an NS5 brain, but it grows with C and not with the B field. So having established this monodromy, we now know that kinematically we have this unbounded field range, but we again have to make the same checks now that we did in the type 2A example. We have to find where the bounds are dynamically. So when this the energy stored in this brain grows, it should not become so big that it destabilizes the moduli and drives them into runaway. That is the first constraint. So there are two ways to ensure that. One way is we have to find a moduli stabilization mechanism that basically creates you in the moduli potential. Is there some kind of chalk? Or is there no chalk? Thanks. Basically, when you have the moduli potential and there's a barrier, this barrier must be at least as high as the energy density that you need for getting 60 e-fold of inflation from this linear potential. Since this is a large field potential, it means this is gut scale. So you need to find a mechanism for moduli stabilization where this is basically a gut scale this height. And then the next point is, of course, the energy of the five brain, naively, would be string scale, would be even higher than gut scale. So what you have to do is you have to, like in this orbifold example, you have to put the two cycles that the five brain wraps down a warp throat, like a Kolmogorov-Strasser throat, and then use the warp factor to suppress the energy density of the brain so that it is comparable with the gut scale potential energy that you need for the inflation to work and not overrun the moduli barriers. So you have to put it down a warp throat and then use a moduli stabilization mechanism that gives sufficiently high barriers. Once you have done that, then you basically can be safe that this is the first criterion to make sure that you don't destroy everything by having inflation on this plane. So the point is, when you try to realize that, then you find that the case with the B field has a problem called and so-called a netter problem. And that comes as follows. The Kähler moduli that you find in the Calabi-Yau compactification, they are inherited before oriented folding from the N=2 structure of the theory. And but once you oriented fold, then the original N=2 multiplet split up in multiplets T alpha, which basically have the real part is the volume of four cycles. And you have so-called G multiplets, which contain these B and C fields. And the point is that when you now calculate how the theory depends on these multiplets, then you will find that the Kähler potential is basically given by the log of the volume of the Calabi-Yau manifold. And this volume is a function of both the volume of the four cycles, so the real part of the T fields, but also on the G fields. So you see that here, there's a term that is like B squared. So the Kähler potential depends not just on T, but also on the B fields that we would like to use as an inflaton on this wrapped D5 brain. So in the simplest case, for just one field of each type, it looks like this. This was done in Thomas Grimm's work in 2007. And then when you write down the full potential on the brain, and you go to Einstein frame in order to define the 4D, I mean, you have the correct 4D gravitational coupling normalization, And you find you have here this square root from the brain tangent that grows linearly with B at large B, but you have this volume suppression. And the volume is a function, if you want, of a sum between the T field and this minus B squared. You see when you expand now, even for a small B around this potential, you find that you get higher corrections, power series expansion. In particular, you get a mass term for, like B squared for small B that corrects the eta parameter of slow row inflation at order one. This is the same kind of problem that you had in KKL-MMT with this brain anti-brain inflation, basically. They had the same kind of structure in the denominator here for the inflaton field, and that either you have to fine tune, but that you can only do on a small field range, or it doesn't work. So this is why there is here a problem when you stabilize, and this problem basically is particularly prominent if you stabilize this T field alone. So the point is that normal moduli stabilization with instantons, I mean this KKL-T mechanism, for instance, you have an instanton superpotential that against the flux superpotential stabilizes T. But that means T is stabilized and not this whole combination, which is the volume. Therefore, when you make this expansion, then you have this eta problem. You might be able to circumvent this if you go back to high scale Susi breaking and don't use non-perturbative effects, but you use corrections to the Kähler potential, like discussed yesterday at Fernando Quevedo's talk, for instance. And use that to stabilize directly the volume, because sometimes they just depend directly on the volume and not just on the T moduli. And then you then fix the whole combination here. Then this is fixed. And then because it's stabilized, it doesn't move when you move B. And then you would not have an eta problem directly. But here we are not pursuing this this avenue. We just go to the other case that I wrap an NS5 brain on the two cycle. Then the C2 field is the inflaton. And as you see here, the C2 field, which is the imaginary part of these G fields, does not appear in the Kähler potential. So the NS5 brain actually will look similar, like it has the volume suppression, but then there's a C squared here. And here, there's no C appearing, so I will not have this eta problem. So I can just now use normal non-perturbative effects to stabilize the T moduli. And they will not cause me an eta problem for the C field that gets this potential from the NS5 brain. So now, the things that could still screw up my potential are the instanton fields themselves, the instanton effects themselves, because they're not only those ones, normal Euclidean D3 brains, which give these a kind of instantons or Gugino condensation on D7 brains. There can be instantons, could be instantons coming from wrapped Euclidean D1 brains. From Euclidean D1 brains that just see the G field and not any kind of T field. Or there could be sitting on a Euclidean D3 brain, you can have basically something like a D1 instanton dissolved in the ED3. And then you have this kind of instanton depends then both on T and these G fields that have the B and C's inside. And in both cases, you would now think, okay, there's this imaginary part of C appearing, and that gives cosines in the scalar potential. So you would get a cosine-like modulation of your linear potential. And if that is too big, you're again screwed. You cannot do it. So one possibility is, which is very likely, there are arguments going back to Witten and refined by Thomas Wim last year, that these, especially these ones, are absent for symmetry reasons. You cannot have them on a consistent F3 compactification. So only these ones would be there, and then you would just make the T field large enough, and then these effects would be, this second effect would be suppressed. What I will do is at the moment, because this is still a work in progress, to understand whether these are really always absent, these first ones, which are not suppressed at all, seemingly, we will assume that they are there. Do the devil's, so to speak, part, and assume that these things are there, and then see how we can suppress them nevertheless. And one way to do this is that you, if these things are there, so you have basically now something like this G field, which is this B over GS plus IC, you stabilize it against some other part of the superpotential, call it whatever, delta WC. How can you make these things small? When they stabilize against this, you can make them small if this is small. So you have to find a stabilization for the T fields, for the volume moduli, such that they produce a residual superpotential that is very small. And there is one mechanism that can do that, and this is the setup by Kardash and Linde from 2004, where you stabilize your volume modulus, the T field, with a race track superpotential in addition to the flux superpotential. You can then fine-tune the value of the flux superpotential such that in the minimum, where the F term of T vanishes, also the superpotential is basically zero, or very small, let's say. And if this is very small, then the G field of this instanton will then basically stabilize at a value, the real part of B, will get a VF such that this becomes very small. And since this gives the sign of the cosine in C, the cosine is suppressed as well, which means that in the end, by tuning the VF of this part, the superpotential, to, in the minimum, to be very small, we can suppress this dangerous instanton effect to a level where it doesn't modulate our linear infraton potential anymore. And the point is now, the same limit where the superpotential VF vanishes is also the limit where low energy supersymmetry merges. If this is really some, I mean, basically the supersymmetry breaking scale becomes zero in the, at the moment where the VF of the superpotential becomes zero because the F term was already zero. So then basically the gravitational mass goes to zero, and then you have, in that limit, you can decouple the scale of inflation and the scale of supersymmetry breaking. So provided this all works, we would have a potential that grows in linear in the field, in the inflaton field phi, where phi is just as a constant renormalization in going to the canonically normalized kinetic field frame. And then basically from having a linear potential in phi, you can derive the spectral index and the power and gravitational wave, the tensor fraction r. And these have these values. So 0.07 is nearly 0.1. So this is clearly visible. You can see compared with the data, this lies a little bit above the type 2a nil manifold models from yesterday, somewhere in between m squared phi squared and this phi to the 2/3, which you get on the type 2a. So it lies here. And when you compare with the data error bars, which are expected to be there in 5 years from now or 7 years from now, 0.01 in both directions, you see that one can clearly discriminate between different classes of models, which is not possible at the moment. So with that, I will conclude. I hope I could make plausible that if you wrap five brains, especially NS5 brains, wrapped on two cycles, you can generate monodromies that allow you to get an unbounded field range for the infraton field, which is a B2 or the C2 field, in the case of NS5 brains. This potential is linear in the inflaton field phi, and this gives a distinctive, again, signature for this kind of class of models that you could hope to measure in the next 5 years. And the point is that the C2 has a near perfect shift symmetry. It doesn't appear in the Kähler potential at all, and only three instantons in the superpotential, and that basically helps you to control the corrections in such a way that you can stabilize the large field range if it doesn't, is completely screwed up. And because C2 is not a geometric modulus, it doesn't appear in the T moduli, you can use this Kalosh-Linde mechanism to stabilize in a supersymmetric minimum that allows you to get low energy supersymmetry. Some open questions are basically that we don't know yet how to do reheating. There's this fine tuning in order to get the superpotential to zero VF. You have to fine tune a lot in the Kalosh-Linde model of moduli stabilization. We have to still see whether these symmetries, I mean, if they are strong enough, we don't need that. If this leading instanton in G is gone, then we don't need the Kalosh-Linde mechanism. We can just use KKRT, and that is less fine tuning compared to the other mechanism. And then, as I said, still, B2 might be possible if you stabilize not with non-perturbative effects, but using Kähler corrections, for instance. Thank you very much.
Over, so we can have one question, and then we'll have to move on. Who was the? I didn't see who was first. Okay.
So, in the case of pre-inflation, you showed how the Kähler modulus appears in combination with B squared, giving rise to unit approximation.
Yes.
But it's this very B squared which appears in the square root of the TPIR, whereas I should expect to see a kinetic term, the new B squared. So, how does it work? So there's a DPI action which has been sent to the fourth.
I want to know where the kinetic term, the limit for B squared is already there in the tree level, tree action in 10 dimensions. It's just, we have in the Wilbur-Schwarz sector of the action, we have a term called A squared, and H is dB, and that gives you the kinetic term for B. That is already there from the beginning.
So it's the same as for the, just gives you the potential, right?
Yeah, exactly. And for the C field, you have DC is F3, the Ramon-Domon freeform B squared, and you have a piece F3 squared in the action, and that gives you the kinetic term for the C field case. Yeah. This is different from the type 2A situation on the default brain, where because it was a brain position, both the kinetic term and the potential were living on the brain. The kinetic term here is living in the closed spring.
So it's basically slow rotor. I mean, the TPI just gives you the potential, not.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
What's the form of the killer potential?
I'm sorry. We're running out of time. Can you keep the questions
for be happy to answer anything further. I mean, I would like to answer now, but I was already over time. I'm sorry.
Thank the speaker one more time.